As a result of our nation's elections this year, is what you're about to see going to remain legal or not? Stay with us for Gospel of Life. Hello, I'm Reverend Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to the program. Soon we will have another national election. And one of the things that is a result of these elections is how close we are to restoring protection to unborn children. Janet, in this show, we are going to see an abortion procedure.
That's right.
Using actual instruments and using fetal models. But we're going to talk with a good friend of ours, Dr. Tony Levitino, a former abortionist.
That's right. You know, Dr. Levitino practiced obstetrics and gynecology for a number of years, but one of the big parts of his practice, unfortunately, was abortion. And thanks God, you know, he converted. Mm-hmm. You know, he came out of the abortion industry. He left the practice altogether because his partner would not convert. And so it was very brave of him, really, to have that conviction, to just walk away from a successful medical practice.
Now, we had him in this studio in a past show, but the reason we want to re-air that interview today is that as the elections get closer and we talk about why abortion is the fundamental issue,
right.
That's just words, but we want to show what we mean, because we have to ask, when we see what he's going to show us, do we want to vote for somebody who thinks that this activity should continue to be legal? Or do we want to vote for somebody who believes, as we do, that this must stop?
That's right.
So, brothers and sisters, look now carefully at this interview with former abortionist Dr. Tony Levitino, and view this program with the upcoming election in mind. Let's listen to Dr. Levitino. Dr. Levitino, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here, Father Frank.
How many abortions have you performed in your career?
I did several hundred, probably while I was a resident. I never actually kept count. But in private practice, over a five-year period, in my first 5 years of private practice, I performed over 1,200 abortions. 1,100 of them were first trimester suction D&C abortions, and over 100 were second trimester D&E abortions.
Okay, so we're going to talk about those two procedures, and of course we should put this in a wider context. There are many abortion procedures that are done, many
yes.
different types.
Many different techniques.
But these are the two most common.
Absolutely.
Okay, and we have here the instruments that are used at various stages of each of these procedures, as well as fetal models. Let's start with the first trimester suction curettage abortion and explain to us actually what happens in that procedure.
Well, the model here gives us some idea of what we're talking about size-wise. Here's a baby that would measure roughly, of course, doctors count from last menstrual period, so this baby would be somewhere in the range of around 10 weeks since last menstrual period. At 12 weeks, the baby is literally the width of your hand. This one just comes out a little bit less than that, and that's why I'm figuring this one to be approximately 10 weeks, and a very typical time for a suction D&C abortion. D&C is dilatation and curettage, the two parts of the operation. Dilation or dilatation is the opening of the cervix, and then curettage is a term we use for scraping the inside of the uterus. Mm-hmm. Now, D&Cs can be done for lots of reasons, not just abortion, but the standard D&C procedure that might be used for, say, bleeding has been adapted to abortion. What is done is, as I said, first dilation. If the pregnancy is in many first trimester abortions are early enough that you don't have to take an additional step other than mechanically dilating the cervix using dilators. If a pregnancy is beyond 9 or 10 weeks, still in the first trimester suction D&C range, we might use a material called laminaria. Laminaria is actually a product of seaweed, believe it or not, and they come in these very tightly rolled, sterilized as an instrument, basically, that has a string on it so that it can be removed from the cervix later. But the laminaria would be introduced through the cervix, and then it absorbs water over 8 hours and slowly dilates. And this tends to make dilation of more advanced pregnancies safer. This is absolutely vital in a second trimester abortion, so we'll talk more about it then. If the laminary has been used, it's removed. The patient is then ready for the procedure. And a series of dilators of different sizes. This is somewhat bigger. This is about a 9-10 Haggard dilator. And this is just the size you would use for a pregnancy, the size, as a matter of fact. When you get to this point of the procedure, the cervix is progressively dilated by using the Haggard dilators. The cervix would be held with an instrument called a tenaculum. This has a couple of sharp teeth on it, which is actually used to literally hold the cervix so it won't move. Mm-hmm. And then dilators are used progressively. They're pushed through the cervix. You have to be very careful, of course. If you use too much force or if you lose control of the instrument, it can actually go right through the uterine wall, which is a perforation, which is one of the big risks that are associated with this type of abortion. The cervix is dilated progressively. In this case, up to this would be a number 10 Haggard, which would be an appropriate size for an abortion this size. And then a suction curette, which would be matching for the size of the gestation, is used. This is a number 12 straight curette. So we would use one slightly smaller. The sizes on the dilators and the curettes correspond. Mm-hmm. So a 10 curette would fit through the opening that the 10 dilator makes. The curette is introduced into the uterine cavity, and then the suction is turned on. Now, of course, we don't have a suction machine here, but it sits a couple of feet off the floor, and there are a couple of bottles on the top of it, and it's connected through clear plastic tubing from the end of the catheter to the machine. This is a very powerful suction machine, and when it's turned on, the catheter in place in the uterus, again, making sure you don't go so far that you perforate the uterus, and then the curette is rotated inside the uterus while that suction is being applied. Now, babies at this size, they're fully formed, two arms, two legs, beating heart, functioning brain, it's all there. But the structures are very soft. The bones have not calcified. So all the tissues are very soft. So the suction machine just rips this baby to pieces because it comes by basically kind of ground up or homogenized right into the tubing and then gets pulled through the tubing into the collection bottles on the machine.
Is the edge of that sharp?
It is not. This one is not sharp. There are other types you can get that do have some little ridges on them.
Right.
But generally, this is really not meant as a scraping instrument. It's mainly just for suction. After the suction is done, most of this tissue is going to be gone. Then the actual curettage part, the scraping, is performed. We have one curette here. This is a really small size. This would be too small to do in this type of abortion. But these come with bigger blades on them, right up to very large sizes that are available. There would be a set on the table. And then this is used to scrape the walls of the uterus out to make sure that all the tissue is removed. Mm-hmm. So the technique would be to dilate the cervix, get as much tissue out with the suction as you can, then scrape the lining, and then I would usually go back one more time with the suction, kind of as a cleanup. Mm. And, of course, as the uterus empties, the uterus tends to contract down. You always have to keep that in mind because, actually, your area is getting smaller and smaller, again, keeping in mind not to do any injury if possible. And then the procedure is completed.
When this is being done, the person performing the procedure cannot see what he or she is doing. Is
suction,
right?
D&C is a blind procedure, as is suction D&E. There is no visualization of any kind. The whole thing is done by feel.
And if some of the parts of the baby's body are left inside at the conclusion of this procedure, what happens then?
That can be a potentially serious complication. If anything is left behind, either bits of the placenta or even bits of the baby, what can happen is, what will sometimes happen, sometimes there is no bad result, the uterus will simply contract or cramp, and the patient will report she's having maybe more than the normal expected amount of cramping, mm-hmm. and then literally pass this tissue. I mean, just literally miscarriage style, literally at home. I mean, sad to say, I once had a patient call up in a panic because she'd passed an arm and it just literally dropped down in her living room. But that can happen. You can cause increased bleeding, even hemorrhaging if there's retained tissue, especially retained placenta. Also, if there's retained tissue, this tissue is dead or is dying now at this point, and it can lead to an infection. There's a risk of infection anyway, just from the instrumentation, but the risk of infection goes up if there's any tissue left behind.
So the procedure you just described is done from what week of pregnancy at the earliest until when at the latest?
Suction D&C abortion is done probably as early as 6 weeks up to about 12 to 13 weeks. As I said, at about 12 or 13 weeks, now we're talking about the baby being, as you know, from rump to the top of the head as being the width of your hand. When the baby is bigger than that, this technique won't work. The tissues are getting, as I said, the tissues are not only getting bigger, but they're strengthening as well. Mm-hmm. And there is a limit to just how much you can do with the suction in terms of tearing up and then pulling this material out. So beyond 12 to 13 weeks, it simply won't work, partially because of the baby's size and then also because of the strength of the body. When we get past that stage, anticipating your next question, we have to really change the procedure over to something called suction D&E, or suction dilatation and evacuation. Years passed when we were first doing abortions. The only methods we used for second trimester abortion were things like saline abortion that isn't used anymore, that would essentially, or prostaglandin abortions, which would essentially induce labor. This was difficult for patients, expensive because of prolonged hospital stays. These women would have to go through labor. I saw them go through labor anywhere from 8 to 36 hours. And in the early 80s, those of us in the abortion industry, me included, were looking for a better method of second trimester abortion, and we came up with the D&E method. Now, in D&E, now this baby is much more, this baby is closer to, I would guess about, maybe 16 or 17 weeks of size. A 20-week baby, you see, I'm holding this baby this way for a reason, because a 20-week baby would literally be, again, head to rump, not counting the feet because they're coiled up, would be the length of your hand. So looking at this size relationship, I'd guess that this baby's about 16 or 17 weeks size, very typical for a second trimester D&E abortion. Same procedure, laminaria is used. Now multiple laminaria are used over a period of 1 or 2 days to get the cervix to dilate enough. Dilatation is one of the most dangerous parts of the procedure. If you're going to perforate the uterus, you're going to do it during the dilation phase when these dilators are being used to forcibly open the cervix. Using laminaria does the procedure over a prolonged period of time and makes it safer. Now you would dilate to a considerable, we were talking about a dilator this size earlier. Now we have to get to progressively larger sizes. This is a 13-14 French catheter or dilator, Hagar dilator, and this is a 15-16. For a baby this size, I would be shooting for a dilation of about at least this much or this much. Mm-hmm. Again, to give me enough, it's not enough room to bring the whole baby through the opening of the cervix, but enough that I can manipulate what's going on. The difference between the two procedures is this. In a D&E procedure, you must use a grasping clamp. This particular one is called a Sofer clamp. It's roughly 13 inches long, so it has a lot of mechanical advantage to it. And the business end of this clamp is up here where there's rows of teeth. And when this, and again, this is blind, just like the suction D&C procedure. When this gets a hold of something, it does not let go. Once that cervix is dilated and you've used the suction now strictly to empty out the bag of water, it doesn't really bring any parts out. The Sofer clamp is reached inside, blindly grabbing at parts of the baby, and then getting a hold and pulling, and you really pull. And when we're talking about a baby up to 20, 22 weeks even with D&E abortion, and when this thing lets go all of a sudden, you pull out an arm or a leg that big and put it down on the table next to you. And you go back with this instrument again and again, and using just this instrument, as I said, because you just grasp and pull hard, you tear out spine, intestines, heart and lungs. Tricky part of a procedure like that is the head, though. And by time, and usually these babies are breech in the position of the uterus, so the head is usually the last thing you're going to get. Again, a blind procedure. You're reaching inside and trying to reach whatever you can, and you know you've probably got the baby's head because the clamp will be extended about as far as your hands will go. And I always told people, when you know you've got it right, when you crush down the clamp and some white material runs out of the cervix, because that was the baby's brains, and then you pull out skull pieces. And I'm dead serious. A lot of times you have a bad day and a little face comes back and stares back at you. But that's the difference between the two procedures. D&E is a riskier procedure because the uterus is bigger, softer, thinner, and it's very easy to run through and perforate the wall. Of course, up here, there's nothing here in the studio, but there's intestines and bladder and everything else. And I certainly had the experience once of not even realizing it, just reaching in and pulling out tissue. When I pulled, out came somebody's intestine right through the cervix, which is entirely possible, and that lady had to have a laparotomy and had to have that intestine repaired.
up to what stage in pregnancy are these procedures performed?
Suction D&E can be performed up to roughly between 22, 23 weeks. 24 weeks is probably, and this is again from last menstrual period, is probably the outside for this procedure. When you get beyond that point, again, the tissues are strengthening as the days go by. The bones are beginning to calcify, and the D&E procedure simply becomes too difficult and too dangerous to do beyond about between 22 and 24 weeks. When we're talking about abortions beyond 24 weeks, too, very important. 24 weeks is a really critical stage. 24 weeks from beyond menstrual period, you are talking about babies that will live on their own with proper medical care. And when you're so you're talking about viable children when we go beyond 24 weeks. Also, these techniques break down. They simply aren't usable beyond that time. And that's when you start talking about partial birth abortion, which, of course, is a totally different procedure.
Mm-hmm. What's the latest, the D&E procedure that you did, latest in terms of the stage of pregnancy?
The latest one I ever did was 22 weeks.
Mm-hmm. The baby, in the case of the first trimester abortion that you described, the parts of the body end up going through the suction tube and into a collection jar.
Correct.
But in the case of the D&E, as you're pulling out one piece after another, you're putting those pieces into a tray. Is that right? And then what has to be done then afterwards? Are the pieces inspected to make sure all the body is there?
That's exactly what you need to do. In describing a D&E abortion, we talk about arms, legs, spine, intestines, and that isn't to gross out the nice people in the TV audience.
Mm-hmm.
You have to literally keep inventory. And when it's over, it sounds gruesome, but absolutely true, you almost essentially reassemble the baby. You mm-hmm. have to make sure that you have two arms, two legs, and all of the pieces. And as I said earlier, because if you leave something behind, that patient could come back infected, bleeding, or worse.
What was done in the time that you were doing abortions with those body parts after the procedure was all over? How are they disposed of?
Properly disposed of, the body parts from an abortion need to go through pathologic examination just like any other tissue removed from the body. There have been absolutely tragic cases that have been, frankly, malpractice where, as a cost-cutting measure, some clinics have been known not to send parts from abortions. They'd simply discard them because they would save that expense. This is very dangerous for the woman because if especially an early D&C abortion is performed, and even with the tissue removed, it should be examined because there are cases of ectopic or tubal pregnancy. You'll get plenty of tissue just from the thickened lining of the uterus, and you'll think that you've got tissue from the baby. But if, especially in an early pregnancy, it's very hard to identify parts in the very early ones. But if you don't have a pathologist look at that tissue, that woman could actually have a pregnancy in the tube. And if that goes undiscovered, normally it would be discovered because it doesn't show on the report. If it's not discovered, that can rupture, and we've seen patients die from this.
My friends, we have a choice to make. Will these procedures continue to be legal in America? One of the things we need to do, if we think the answer to that question is no, is to be sure we vote on Election Day and we elect pro-life candidates. And Janet, there's a lot that can be done along those lines, isn't there?
There is. I mean, people, first of all, we have a great website called politicalresponsibility.org.
Yes.
They can go up there and get involved in our prayer campaign. But the other thing, too, is they need to talk about what they saw here that Dr. Latino showed them. And anyone who you know who is pro-choice, because they think abortion, we have to keep it legal because of women need abortion. Listen to what he said about that procedure. I certainly wouldn't want any of my daughters to have that procedure done. People need to think in terms of that. That right now in the United States, do you realize someone could have their daughter taken for an abortion without them even knowing it in most states? I mean, this is pretty incredible. So we really need people to pass on this information to help convert more people to the pro-life issue.
PoliticalResponsibility.org, as you mentioned, is a prayer campaign. There's our booklet, Voting with a Clear Conscience, that can be ordered from that website. And there is an online volunteer action form as well. So if people go there and also drive other people to that site, they'll be able to follow up on what they saw with Dr. Levitino.
That's right.
Thank you for joining us, brothers and sisters. Let us be disturbed by the information that we just saw, because being disturbed is not a bad thing if we then take that energy and let it propel us into action. Mobilize as many people as you can and let them know that for this election, one issue overrides all the rest. Will we allow this horrifying violence against unborn children to continue? Stay with us now on Gospel of Life. We'll be going to our action segment after this break. Stay with us.
There's nothing wrong with your television set. You don't see anything because there's nothing there. Abortion, the most common surgery in America. Why don't we ever see what it looks like? A message from Priests for Life.
When I found out I was pregnant, I thought I would lose my job.
My boyfriend told me to choose between him and the baby.
I was already struggling to care for one child, so I had an abortion.
I had trouble conceiving again.
I tried to commit suicide.
I started to have nightmares. You see, abortion didn't solve our problems.
It just created different ones.
That's why we are silent no more.
We found help in Hanley, and you can too. Call or go online today.
I want to be a fireman when I grow up.
I want to be a teacher.
I want to be president of the United States.
I want to find a cure for cancer.
The choice to have an abortion alters the course of the future. Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
Welcome to our action segment. PoliticalResponsibility.org is the website we want to talk about during this segment. And Janet, that has three very important avenues for activity for our viewers between now and Election Day.
That's right. And, of course, the first thing is something that everybody can do, whether you can get out and participate in helping with a campaign or you're homebound or elderly or whatever your state in life, it's prayer. Prayer is the one thing we can all jump on board and do. And even young people who are too young to vote yet, they can be involved in the prayer campaign.
The prayer campaign, to which there is a link on politicalresponsibility.org as soon as you go to that site, and it has a prayer that we've composed for our national elections that we're asking people to pray each and every day. They can download the prayer from that website, and on that website they can indicate to us that they're committed to say it.
That's right. And, of course, and prayer always leads to the next thing, which is take some action. Because once you've prayed about something, it usually naturally leads you, let's do something about it.
Yes. And on politicalresponsibility.org, we have an online form that people can fill out if they want to volunteer for various election-related activities. That form, once they fill it out, will give us an indication of what they would like to do, and then our staff will communicate with them to give them ideas and resources and even to connect them with some local groups that can help them carry out those activities.
That's right, because in these coming weeks, right before such a key election that we have this year, so much is at stake still. We need to know who's willing to help, especially in that last 72 hours, to distribute literature, help inform people door-to-door. Well, you can't decide in the 72 hours, I want to help. We need to know now. Who are the people that are willing to make themselves available? Maybe take the day off for Election Day. All that planning has to happen now, and then you send the troops out into battle. So we really want people who will make themselves available to get in the fight to go up and fill out that form. And let us know.
Even if they can only give a little bit of time.
That's
no
right.
Amount of time is too small.
No. Even if you can say, well, I only have about an hour during those 3 days that I can help, that's all we need. Just tell us what hours, and we'll put you in touch with the people.
Or starting right now with letters to the editor and various things that they can post on the Internet and things like that. Well, at politicalresponsibility.org, then we have the prayer campaign, we have the volunteer sign-up form, and then we have information about our key educational piece that we're sending out this year. Tell people about it.
Well, you know, very often people say, well, when I go into that voting booth, I want to be a Christocrat. I want to do as Christ would do, vote in a very biblical way. We have a great resource called Voting with a Clear Conscience. And this was 10 steps, 10 points that will help you discern ahead of time that you are doing the right thing when you get into the voting booth.
Voting with a Clear Conscience is a booklet I wrote that can be distributed in churches and by churches and through any tax-exempt organization. And at the beginning of the book, we have printed there the letter from legal experts, Jim Bopp and his associates, some of the nation's top experts in tax law and what tax-exempt groups can do, saying that this booklet is perfectly clear. They give it a green light for being distributed by churches. There's no threat to the tax exemption because the book does not name candidates. It doesn't endorse candidates. It gives principles, just like the title says, of voting with a clear conscience so that you can go into the voting booth and then come back out again and know that you've done your very best in the sight of God to do what's right in terms of electing our leaders.
Well, you know, in the last few election cycles, Christians have all shown up because of the key issues, both life and family. And we just need them to do that more than ever because there's still so much at stake out there that we need everyone participating. If they do, we will continue advancing the culture of life.
Well, thanks, Janet. And thank you, brothers and sisters, for being people of action. Now, if you take this website, politicalresponsibility.org, and you see the three things that we've mentioned, the prayer campaign, the educational booklet, and the volunteer form, then take a yet another step and bring this bring as many people to this website as you can by making a link to it on your website or by sending out a link to it in your email. Publish it in your newsletter. Everything you can possibly do. This ultimately will benefit you and your community and the local activity that you want to see fostered within your parish, within your diocese, within your pro-life groups. PoliticalResponsibility.org. It's tailored for people of all denominations, or even if a person is not particularly religious. If they're concerned about the way our country is going to go in the elections, PoliticalResponsibility.org is something that they are going to want to know about. And I thank you for all that you can do to make that happen. God bless you.
Happy birthday.
The decision to have an abortion not only affects that moment in your life.
Kristen Gordon.
It affects many precious moments to come.
I now pronounce you man and wife.
Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
Suppose a candidate said, "I support terrorism." Would you even bother to ask his position on other issues? Support of terrorism disqualifies him from consideration. So it is with one who supports abortion. That, too, is the taking of innocent human life, and support for abortion should disqualify a candidate from consideration. This is Father Frank Pavone. Friends, as we conclude our program, may I invite you to do four things. First of all, tell other people about Gospel of Life. Tell them when these programs air so that they can tune in and learn more about the pro-life movement. Secondly, we like to hear from you. On our website, gospeloflife.com, you can even send us your prayer requests, and our entire ministry team will be more than happy to lift up your concerns and intentions before the throne of God. Thirdly, we're eager and ready to come to your community, to preach in your churches, to gather with your pro-life groups, and to help inspire you in the pro-life cause. And finally, we ask you to donate so that we can keep these programs on the air. You can send your tax-deductible contributions to us at Gospel of Life Ministries. Again, go to our website, and thank you.